Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about eliminating screen conflicts in their home. This is Melanie Hempe, and I want to welcome everyone today. If you are new, we are so glad you found us, and everyone else, welcome back. Today, we are going to dive right into some real issues around what our kids are doing right now on their screens in online learning situation we have wrapping up, hopefully. But our guest today is going to talk about her experience in working with kids and how all this is affecting them, because there are some really big deal items here that we need to talk about. But before we get started with that, I was just wanting to share a little bit about what kids are doing on their screens. And so in order for us to understand this, and I know there's a lot of parents out there listening, maybe you're just new to this whole issue. Maybe you've been following Screen Strong for a long time and you kind of know how we feel about the research and how all this crazy screen time that our kids have been deluged with, actually way more than the terrible 6 to 7 hours they used to be spending on screens. Now they're spending upward, 9-10 hours a day because of all the issues that they have to be on their screens for school. But what I want to point out before we get started is an underlining fact that maybe we have forgotten, or maybe we've never thought about this, but I want you to think about this. Kids do not use screens the way adults do. I'm going to repeat that again. Your child does not use their screen the way you use your screen. And this is a really big concept to understand. For a child, and I'm talking all the way through K through 12, their screen is an entertainment device, period. They're looking to their screen for entertainment. This means that their video games are entertainment, their smartphones are entertainment, the group texting even is a source of entertainment for them. Social media especially is a source of entertainment. So when we try to transition our kids and say, oh, now we're going to learn our math on our screen, in their brain, that transition is very difficult. It is very difficult for a child to use an entertainment toy for a learning tool. This is what we're going to talk about today. We are going to unpack why this isn't working. And our guest, I'm so excited, is Rhonna Glickman. She is a retired teacher. She now is tutoring a lot because instead of speaking out in public like she was doing, going around to schools and speaking about the dangers of social media to parents, teachers, and students and administrators and all that, she's now found herself back in this wonderful role of tutoring kids that are on their digital learning platforms. I can't even imagine how that's working out. Rhonna, thank you so much for coming and welcome.
Thank you, Melanie. It's great to speak with you again and an honor to be on your program.
Well, we are so excited to dive in here. We've got some really important topics to talk about today. But first, I just want to find out, what made you passionate about this issue? I mean, you were a retired teacher and then you started, your website is socialmediasafety.education, and spell out the word education, socialmediasafety.education. So what made you start that? How fabulous. What made you start that?
Actually, I started not the website, but educating parents and teachers and students about the dangers of going on social media, because it was part of our curriculum way over 10 years ago. And it was just something I became passionate about as I saw the changes in my students emotionally, mentally, and socially over the years. And it wasn't a good change. And I saw how they were addicted to their phones each and every year, more addicted, and their personalities, how they became more argumentative. And you're like, wow, why are these kids changing? And so doing my own personal studies with the students I have, the teachers I work with, I was in a middle school, but also talking to kindergarten teachers up to 12th grade teachers, we were all seeing the same thing, that the kids were coming in much more mouthy. And we found that a constant in this was that kids were on their phones. Kids that were not on their phones, addicted to games, playing games, didn't have the same kind of personality as those students that were addicted. And I guess the addiction part would be on your phone much longer than you should be. And this was pre-COVID. The anxiety and the depression, the kids asking, can I go to the guidance counselor? And the look on their face, I would never deny them going, talking to the guidance counselors. And they just had a revolving door. Kids coming in and out all day. And 99% of the time, it was due to online usage and the bullying. A lot of it was grades too. But I think the two are combined because the more you're on social media, the less you are attending to. And no, they cannot multitask, no matter how many times they tell you they can. So I know I just jumped around all over the place. But of course, the anxiety and depression skyrockets the more they are on.
That is a really good point to bring up, that that's a linear change in what that means and the data and the research out there. The fact is, the more kids are on social media, the more anxiety they experience. And so if you're on just a little bit, you experience a little bit of anxiety. If you're on a lot, you experience a lot. There's no safe amount that says, oh, you can be on this much and then there's no anxiety. It is a linear progression. And that's a really interesting point to bring up. The other thing that you just brought up that I'm so glad, personality change. I was just thinking about this yesterday, how these devices are changing our kids' personalities. It's making them different people.
And it's not pretty. And with the year and a half I have been going to the children's houses and wearing masks until we all were vaccinated. I am not doing any Zoom because I don't want them in front of computers. In fact, I don't even use computers when I'm working with the children, except for reading program, maybe 10 minutes, if even that, during an hour-long session. But what's happening is I'm having kids as young as 7-year-olds and through 10-year-olds that are telling me what we're going to do, how long we're going to do it, and most of all, if we are going to be working. In the case of privacy, I'm going to just say that I had a 7-year-old boy that basically said, I am not doing this. You can't make me. I didn't invite you over. You can leave anytime you want. I'm not doing this.
Wow.
And this is someone that needed so much help. And his mom was trying. I have to say she was trying, but she was also trying to give him anything and everything. Of course, so number one thing is, I'm going to take away your iPad if you don't, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, I don't care. And she's like, well, what do you want? Do you want me to go to McDonald's? I'll bring you in the nutrition. I'm not even going to get into the nutrition today. But, oh, my gosh, what these kids are eating. Oh, yeah, yeah. So he basically decided he didn't want tutoring anymore. And we stopped. And that was the third family that had happened to. I've had families that say, well, now that Johnny is back in school full time, when he gets home at 2 o'clock, he's tired. So we're going to cease tutoring.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. I just brought Johnny up a whole grade level. He has a 504. Another child has repeated a certain grade. And you want me to stop because he's going to be tired when he gets home? I had another student tell me, we're not going to write today during tutoring because I already wrote during school. So basically the kids are, honey. I did laugh. I said, well, does that mean I don't get to talk today? Because I already talked. They are telling me, and they are getting away with, I'm not seeing parental authority like I used to.
So let's talk about that for a minute. That's the first point that I want to unpack here with you, because we've got two or three things here we need to unpack. And so the first thing is the lack of parental authority, and how do screens play a part in that. It sounds like that you are seeing a real big correlation between this more independent screen time and this lack of parental authority, which makes sense because the screen world is a world. It's a virtual world. So our kids are sort of leaving the real world where we, the parent, are the authority, and they're sort of shifting over to this virtual world. And this has always been my takeaway on this is the more time they spend in that virtual world, the less attached they are to the real world, which means the less attached they are to the authority in the real world, the parent.
Exactly.
So the parents are letting it happen, and we don't want to bash parents. Of course, we're all parents and we're all in this together. We're in this transition together. So why, in your opinion, why are parents letting go of their authority? Because they have to let go of it.
I have three reasons based on what I have seen and experienced. Number one, these are hard times for kids. I'm not saying it is an excuse, but here's what I'm hearing. These are hard times. The kids have been on their computers all day. They need to de-stress. And I'm kind of thinking, but if they've been on their computers all day, and I put in quote marks, learning, then why are we putting them on more? They think they're doing a favor. Number two, the working parents. I can't even comprehend, especially having a child with autism, who's now 29, if I was going through this trying to teach online, and I might have given him a device if he wasn't in school to keep him quiet so that I could keep doing my work. So it gives the parents a break. But what they don't realize is when you are giving them this device to keep them happy now, every time you do that, the unhappier your home environment's going to be. So many parents are saying, I'm so stressed, I'm so stressed. But unfortunately, they are the cause of some of the stress. So I want to give them this device to keep them quiet. So too many of these kids are getting into, my seven-year-olds, they're getting into Fortnite. They're doing Roblox. These are, I know you had a fabulous speaker on not too long ago talking about predators. They're having a field day with all these kids online. They couldn't have even... They're probably the ones that are going, my God, this COVID is great. All these kids are online. Parents aren't watching them because they're working. So I would say it's easier. It's for them. And again, not bashing. I can't even comprehend trying to work and raise two or three kids at different levels in school and being their teacher.
Right.
It's just something they've always done. So it's become a habit, not only for the parent, but for the kids.
So the reason why the parents are letting go of their authority is it's a harder time for the kids. They are working. They do need the break. And then it just is a habit that just is just perpetuating. I mean, that makes sense. It's like, if this is what you've always done, then this is what you'll continue to do. It's very hard to stop a habit.
And what I wish we could have them see is their future child.
Yeah.
So the child that is saying, I'm not going to school. I talked to a guidance counselor at a middle level school. We talk every few months so I can see what's going on, especially during COVID. And what he said was that, you know, in addition to the anxiety and depression up because the kids are worried about their grades and not seeing each other, the social aspect that has gone away, is that the parents are enabling the kids, if they don't want to go to school, they can stay home.
I know it. And where
did that become a choice?
I don't know. This is where the authority piece is breaking down, because our kids need us to be tough. They need us to be that strong leader. Even when we're exhausted and we're having to stay home and do all this stuff, it's very hard to work from home. A lot of us are getting used to it, but there's just so many distractions, you know, that are constant. And then it's just really hard. We tend to break down and give in on things. And I think that the screen is the easiest thing to give in.
Absolutely.
But the point that you are making is that you pay now or you pay later. And, you know, one thing I've realized after not allowing our family to go down the screen path where we're using screens for our entertainment and our social activities, because that's basically what Screen Strong is. We help parents get their kids to move their entertainment offline and their social worlds offline, right? And when that happens, it is just so much easier. In the very beginning, it's a little bit of a hard transition initially, depending on how long your kids have been on. But in the long run, it is so much less stress. That's why I just want to paint this picture today for everyone who's listening. It feels like the easy thing to do, just like it might feel like the easy thing to just open the bag of M&Ms for dinner, you know, because it's like, oh, this is the easiest thing to do. But over time, of course, that's going to, you know, wreak havoc on your kids. And this is what I'm so concerned about, is that parents are getting used to this now, and our standards and our bar and our high bar for our kids is just, we're just lowering it. We're just lowering our standard. And so we need to wake up. And again, we don't want to make parents feel bad, we need to start with today.
Educating them. All we want to do is educate them.
Yeah. And we need to start with today. So parents, if you're listening, don't worry about what you've done. We've all done it. I'm like the biggest offender of everything out there. It's screen related. So
but look what you've learned and how you've turned it around to now educate others on what not to do.
That's right. And I know how hard it is. And so, but you just have to start with today. You start with what you're going to do tomorrow. You start with, you can't look back. So if you have, if you're realizing right now that, you've kind of lost track of your position in the family, or if you're having a gut feeling that those screens are kind of taking over, you're right. They are taking over, and you have to go get your authority back. And we don't mean that in a mean way. We just mean that your kids need a coach again. They need you to be their parent.
Another example of a great example of this, of taking it away and how it might be difficult at first. I had another family, had a 7-year-old female, and she was the sweetest thing in the world. So sweet, so smart, but they just wanted to keep up with everything. She turned in to a little shop of horrors. Mm. She all by herself. And I asked the parents what was going on. Well, she was actually telling me she was on Roblox and she was doing Fortnite and she had just turned 7 a month ago. My next visit to the parents, and when I work with these families, I get close to them. I call them my kids, my families. And we develop a really nice relationship and rapport. I handed the book Glow Kids, which I think still is one of the best books out there, to them. She read the first 12 pages. And I know we always say that the first 12 pages, read the whole thing. But the first 12 pages, if you don't change your mind after that, we don't know what else we can do for you. She unplugged. Her daughter went through a horrible withdrawal because of the addiction and missing it so much because she wasn't even playing outside anymore. But I'm in upstate New York, and we just had the worst weather last month. Now it's just beautiful out. I don't even see kids out playing. I really don't. And I'm in an apartment complex with about 75, 85 units. She wasn't going out and playing anymore. They went through detox. They said the weekend was horrific. She was slamming doors. She was trying to punch holes in walls. She was so angry. He said by the end, she was playing Sunday evening. She was playing Legos with her sister. They were engaging in play and creativity. You've got to change. You've got to restructure the mind. And we've talked about that neuroplasticity. You've trained the brain to do this. Now you need to train the brain to get into books, get into reading, get into getting outside, play something that will cause you, and do it as a family, to think, have conversation, eye-to-eye contact. And again, I just want to go back to this. This is not a blame game, but parents, you need to look in the mirror too. Many of my students when I was teaching said, you're telling us to get off the screens, but why can't you tell our parents?
Yeah. And let me say something. Let me just say something about that. I agree. I totally agree that especially during certain ages, when our kids are in certain ages and grades and stuff, it's even more important that we need to shut the lids on our laptops, put our phones away. In fact, you know, y'all heard me say before that I had to literally put my phone in, keep the phone in the car when I drove the kids home from school. I would just leave it in my car. I would come in, get that first 30 minutes of that wonderful time to talk with them and get their day situated, you know, after school. And then go back and get my phone. Like I had to not even bring it in the house with me because it was just so distracting. And that was really good. But what I want to say is that parents also have to realize that they are working. They do need their device. Remember what I said in the beginning, they're using their devices as a tool. They're using it for their job. Kids don't understand this. There's no way they can really understand it. We keep thinking our kids are adults. They are not adults. And of course, Leonard Sachs brings that up so well in all of his books. We are hurting our kids when we treat them like adults. And when we hand them these screens, we are fooling ourselves if we think that they're going to use them like we use them as a tool. So what can parents do? What are some practical things? And people ask me this. I'm sure they ask you this. And I'm sure you've seen. I think the only solution for this first part that we're talking about here with parents, really, I really do think it's about the only thing you can do. You want to limit the screen time, but the screen time that they are on that is required, you're going to have to be present for that. And what I mean is literally sit down with your kids at a common place in the kitchen or wherever you're doing your work and make sure you can see what they're doing on their screen. Maybe you bring your computer and you're working on your work for your work and work together. And even though you're not maybe talking the whole time, you're in presence with them and you're seeing what they're doing, because what's going to happen, they're going to say they're doing their math. They're going to say they're doing their English, and they're going to be off playing some video games, or they're going to be checking their social media on their computer. They're going to be doing all this stuff that is so distracting, which we don't blame them, because remember, they're using that screen as an entertainment source. Right. That's the only thing they know in their brain. We think that they're going on that screen, right, to the library, right, to look up research. No, they're not.
That's not. Sorry, I'm only laughing because it's like, you know, the kids are like, I had 7 hours of homework last night.
Yeah.
You did. Did you have your phone near you? I bet if you took away your phone and computer, you could have gotten that down to about an hour.
And so this is what I want to tell parents, because I'm doing this too with my kids. We all have our kids at home, and hopefully everybody is going to be fine to go back soon. But when I do that, when I sit with them, and when I actually see that it only takes them 15 minutes to complete a class of homework, you know, then they move on. I can help structure that. The other really important thing to do is to have a schedule. You literally write down every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes, this is what we're doing. This is next. This is next. This is now we're going to go outside and take a break. Now we're going to come back in and get a snack. Then we're going to dive in and we're going to read. In fact, we're all going to get our books and we're going to sit on the couch, and I'm going to read my book too. And we're going to all read together. You're going to have some of your day mapped out. And what I've learned is initially when you do this, Rana, when you initially do this, it's really weird and awkward at first, right? But then after a few days, it's like, oh my goodness, peace just settles.
And the kids love it. I would love to add something to that schedule.
Yeah.
I think it's because I taught life skills and I saw the kids coming in with fewer and fewer skills, like a sixth grader that has never put a dish in a dishwasher. So have a little chore chart. Yeah. They live there too, rent free. Like one chore a day. Monday, you're setting the table. Tuesday, you're clearing it. Thursday, take out the garbage.
Right.
Collect the garbage from everyone's. Make your bed every day.
Yeah, just to get them to feel like they're part of a working family and that they're part of this working unit, or, you know, this machine that you've got going. If they don't feel like they're a part of it, they're going to get off into their virtual world, and that virtual world is going to meet all those needs. Okay, so we've talked about the parents. We've talked about the kids just taking the reins, which is what they'll do. I call it the monkeys are running the zoo, right? So that's what I call it. So the next thing let's talk about that you mentioned is this culture of disrespect that is growing. And what does that look like on your end? You've got your boots on the ground. You're there literally in front of kids. What does this look like? How does the disrespect appear? What does it look like?
I firmly believe, and I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I raised my children, two boys, and I don't believe there's consequences. I saw a lot and heard a lot of parents, if you don't, then this won't, then you're not going to blah, blah, blah. But there wasn't follow through. Mm-hmm. So I believe having consequences. And you know what? You have to write it down. Write it down. I'm a visual learner. I would love to see it written down. You know, parents are saying I'm exhausted because I'm yelling all the time. Uh-uh. Point your chart. Here's one. Here's your second one. Here's your third time I've had to tell you something and you were mouthy. Here's what's going to happen.
That whole thing about being exhausted. And you know what? You're exactly right. Parents, and I was too back in the day when we had screens running our house. I was exhausted over it because it was this constant argument, I guess, and conflict over screen time. Now that we have a game-free home and the kids don't have, our teenagers here don't have smartphones, we're never arguing over that. It is not exhausting anymore. It's so amazing what happens.
And you don't even have to have it as a punishment household. I totally believe in giving rewards. You know what? I haven't had to talk to you today or raise my voice. I love the way you've been independent. It's a beautiful day. Let's go walk and get some ice cream together.
Yeah, and spend time, you know, just spend time with them. But let's get back a second to the disrespect. I know the first time years ago that I read a group text from just some parents I was working with, they showed me their kid's phone they hadn't even read all this stuff. It was just terrible. It was their kids were talking about them, believe it or not, using their first name, using their parents' first name in this text, this group text. And I was just kind of blown away. I would never have called my parents by their first name when I was a 12-year-old. Of course, I never did that even my whole life.
Because you respected them.
Because there was a respect. And so that was my first little inclination into the world of disrespect and this whole culture of disrespect. But what do you see? Are you seeing that they don't respect you as a tutor? Obviously, you're an adult in their life. And it's not just parents. It's teachers, other, you know, their piano teacher.
You know what? I think at the bottom of the totem pole for getting disrespected that rarely happens is the coach. The coach rarely hears this because the kids don't want to get kicked off the team.
Yeah.
There's more respect for a coach than I have seen for teachers. And as far as the tutoring, because I'm not in a classroom, sometimes, very rarely, I'm not a real teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And in this whole situation with the parents trying to teach, the kids cannot see their parents as teachers.
Okay.
You are a parent. You're not a teacher. They can't see them as both. So they're not listening. And that's where I'm brought in. They're not listening to me. They won't do their homework. I can tell you what it looks like, but what it sounds like is this: I'm not going to do this. You can't tell me what to do. And again, 7-year-olds, I was in the room of the child because that's where he wanted to learn. We'd sit on the floor. He had great books. And he didn't feel like doing tutoring that day. He said he was tired. And I said, well, I'm here and we're going to learn. And you're just turning it around. He said, this is my room in my house. Oh. You can't tell me what to do.
Wow. Wow.
And that was one of my nicer child.
How in the children. World do kids? Okay. That's terrible. And what happens with that culture of disrespect when they are not respecting the authorities in their life, it makes them very anxious. And I want everybody to listen to this. It makes your child anxious when they are rude to you. And the reason how this happens, the way this happens, is as a child, when you no longer have respect for your authority, for the person that sets the boundaries, for the person that ultimately guides and guards and protects you from that world out there, then all of a sudden you're feeling very stressed and very anxious, which will lead to depression. It's very, very depressing for a child not to have a strong authority figure in their life to guide them, especially now during the season of chaos that we're in. So I want parents to really understand how letting kids get away with that type of disrespectful language, behavior, name calling, whatever it is really hurting your kids. And if you can see it that way, it will really help you be motivated and just have the motivation to stop it. And you have to stop it really early. Because
you know what? I think the first time it happens, you're like, no, not in this house.
And one thing I did, and we continue to do with our kids, when the slightest little disrespectful tones start coming up, one really good thing to do, because a lot of parents are thinking, what do I do? I don't know what to do. You can have them write an essay. I always love essays, you know, because they need to practice writing.
Yeah.
They actually need.
And not like you're texting.
No. Writing. No, it's not typing. It's a written essay with a paper and a pen or pencil. And they have to write the 3 reasons why I should not disrespect my parents. Okay. So anyway, that's just a little tip. I'll just throw that out there.
Absolutely. 100% love that. Again, as a visual learner, I have advised parents to put the rules up there, put the chore chart up there. So all you need to do is point.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Just point.
And let me just say the other reason why you're seeing all this disrespect in your tutoring right now, and just it's an epidemic right now. Another reason is because our kids are hanging out too much with their peers online. Kids tend to mimic what our peers are doing.
Goodness, yes.
Right. And I'm not throwing everybody under the bus here. I'm just saying when you get a group of 7, 8, 9, 10 year old kids, 12, whatever they are, and one of them just one of them starts disrespecting their parents, it is so easy for everybody to jump on board and do that. So,
they think it's cool.
They think it's
and
cool.
They don't want to be the one that's left out and not. No one's going to, you're not going to have a middle schooler go, that's not very nice.
Of course not. And they should, they don't have the executive function skills to do that. And so
that's what I was going to talk about next. Yes.
So yeah, we're going to talk. Oh, good. That's what we're going to talk about in our third little point here. But let me just say that this culture is just a real ripe breeding ground for disrespect when our kids are online, away from you, away from their parents even knowing what they're doing and who they're hanging out with. See, we would never do this in person. We would never let our kids go hang out with kids that are 5 years older than them because they're going to pick up things that they shouldn't pick up. And it's, in that age bracket, it's just the age difference is very great. But when they're online, whether you think they're doing their math, but really they're playing Fortnite or they're in a chat room on a video game or they're on their social media, we think that they're doing all of this homework. We think that they're around the right kind of people and they're not. That's why the number one tip to solve this problem is to co-view and be involved with what your kids are doing, especially when they're little. When they're a little bit older, like in middle school, you still have them sit in a common area. You pull your work right alongside with them. You keep an eye on what they're doing. You make a schedule. And you say, okay, for 30 minutes, you have 30 minutes only to do this math. And then we're going outside. You've got to direct it. And that is the only way. That's really the only way because they're not going to be able to do it themselves.
But I just want to add one thing to that, if I may.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I am all for the monitoring. You need to monitor every keystroke and everything your kids are doing, every text, either using their phone or on the computer. Because that's where you're going to find out if your kid's in trouble or they're starting trouble, they are being bullied or they are bullying someone else. And I can't even tell you how many times about the parents saying, well, what about their privacy? They are not, who's paying the phone bill at 10 years old for your $600, $700 phone? Not your kids.
No.
It's your phone, parents. You have the right to check what they're doing. And not only the right, but the obligation.
I follow what the FBI recommendations are. And years ago, I sat and talked to an FBI agent for a long time. And they said the same thing. And they said, if you can't monitor it, then you delete it. And so that was the turning point for me, because I realized I had failed miserably at monitoring what my kids were doing online. And that was the easiest solution. We just paused, delay, delete, whatever you need to do. If mom can't monitor it, then we're done. And our life got so much easier. And what you're trying to do is give your kids time to build their brains to the point where they can handle more of this on their own. It's that simple. It's that simple. They don't have the executive function skills to do that. As far as privacy, yes, I will reiterate that your kids do not need privacy online from you. The issue of privacy is a whole nother discussion for another day. As far as they're revealing too much online, that is for sure. Kids are, they don't have any private thought, in their head. It's all online. They don't keep anything private. So that causes a lot of problems. But as far as parents feeling like their kids need privacy and trust, because you say, oh, well, I have to trust my kids. No, you don't. That is an adult character quality. Trust is not a character quality for a kid right now. They need to trust you. That's what you need to work on. That the trust goes that way, not the other way.
And I think there needs to be a situation where the parents are respectful. So let's say the Melanie is talking to her friend about Todd and he's just so cute and I like him a lot. Don't go in and talk to them or your mother shouldn't be going, oh, it's Todd.
No. Yeah.
No, that's not what we're talking about, Monica. We're talking about dangerous situations your child is in where you need to step in, because if it were happening in person, you would. To me, I wrote an article about this where it was just like, as pregnant women and for the fathers to be, we're going to already be that mama bear. Like, I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to take my prenatal vitamins. I rub my tummy all the time. I can't wait to have this baby and blah, blah, blah. And less than 5 years later, you're doing detrimental things to your child. Why? Let's go back to that caring quality and protection that you had for the 9 months your child was in you. Why is that happening when they're born?
Yeah, it's happening. We're giving in to all this because of there's just so much social conformity around it. And there's so many things in our society that we're confused about. And that's why the education piece is so critical. To get on our website, go to our Learn tab, take our KBS 101, which is our Kids, Brains, and Screens overview of our workshop, and just start learning more of the science. So let's dive into this third section here that I wanted to cover with you on executive function and brain development. From your view, what's happening here? What's happening with this disconnect with the learning and the clash, I think you mentioned, of this brain development piece?
I think what's happening is that when COVID hit and the kids were online all the time, again, there's no other solution. I know a lot of people put their children in private schools because they were continuing with the education. And when talking to parents, and I read an article where it said the top 10 emotional concerns about kids are the things that the parents can control. So on top of the learning, and again, with the brain changing, it's now learning to learn online. But there was not a lot of learning going on, especially for the younger kids, because they're unable to sit for a very long period of time. I had one family that said for 45 minutes, her daughter had to read alone, but on Zoom for some reason. So you're learning differently when you're online. There are many more distractions, going to an article, possibly another article is popping up. And the comprehension is also different, I have understood in many studies that I have read, versus reading from a book.
Right.
So going back to the brain, and I think what's happening is, again, this lack of caring, where I'm seeing it in the middle school, I'm seeing it in the high school, talking where you're supposed to have 15 kids in class and 3 show up. You're supposed to show your whole face, but only a little bit shows. And then the poor little kids, they're going, I can't sit still and look at a screen for 5 hours. I don't think I could either.
No.
But again, I don't have the answer because there still needs to be learning taking place. So with the brain changes and the brain is changing and getting used to being online, and then the parent is going to give them a reward after being online all day to play a game, that worries me. Because now you're adding up and you're on a screen all day from 5 to 7 hours.
One of the reasons years ago when I started all the work I did that I'm doing now with educating parents on this, you know, one of the things I would say back then before COVID, of course, was your kids already are spending 4, 5, 6 hours a day on a screen at school, or they're exposed to a screen, or the screen's there, or it's somehow into their life. So when they get home, the last thing they need to do is get on more screen time and play video games and get on their social media. That's just the last thing that they need.
They need to get outside, get fresh air. Unless it's minus 30 below, get outside, take a walk. And what's going to happen when they go back to school? Not only are we going to have the mental health issues from not being in school and seeing their friends and doing connections, is they're going to need to retrain how to be a student.
Yeah.
Getting organized, getting to class on time. That's actually something they need to retrain their brain.
Yeah. And what you're touching on is a really good point, because learning is hard. Learning is lonely work. Learning
Correct.
Is slow. So screens are fun. Screens are not hard. Right there, it's like low effort, high reward. Low effort, high reward is that constant low effort, high reward. And so they're getting used to low effort, high reward with their screens. They're getting used to not feeling that pain, because it's just really hard to sit down and struggle through a concept in history or math or English or write that term paper. That's just, you know, it takes a lot of concentration, a lot of focus. And these are the skills that we're missing on a screen. They're not only not helping, they're doing harm. So if that makes sense, they're not.
Absolutely.
Because they're not learning how to focus. They're not learning how to sit still, right? And to have this deep concentration on a screen. And this is just factually proven in studies over and over. Like you said before, when you read on paper, it's very different than when you read on a screen. So I want parents to think about it this way. Screens are necessary for some things for school, for sure. Screens are necessary to type and turn in your essays and your papers. There are certain things that you do need to do on a screen. However, as a parent, I think it's totally appropriate for you to talk to the school, talk to the teacher, work with your kids and say, okay, what, how much of this can we move offline? And that's what we've done. We've actually gotten textbooks. We have everything that we can. We print out, they read, they highlight, they underline, they do mm-hmm. as much as they can. And I'm sure you've seen this as a tutor. The minute that a child starts taking notes by hand instead of typing their yes. notes, that immediately is like a whole grade level of grade.
That is so true. I love the way you said that because I'm teaching my students how to highlight as they read. It's called Reading for Understandings, where you read the questions before you read the material.
Right.
And then we highlight because you're studying at the same time.
Exactly. And that's another way for them to focus. So again, I want everybody to hear us say, we're not saying that we're going to be able to throw all these screens out. That's not what we're saying. We're not completely anti-tech and anti-screen and all that kind of stuff. We want to use it for the good things, realizing yeah. that our kids are only going to be looking at it as an entertainment source. Okay. Keep that in your mind the whole time. They're just looking, how can I have fun with this thing? And then you have to understand as a parent, as a coach, as the guide and leader and authority in your kid's life that you know best, that this learning stuff is really hard. So what can you do to make that happen? And the way that we make that happen is we don't reward our kids with more Fortnite. We don't reward them with more screen time. That doesn't even make sense. So we have talked about parents and needing to get their authority back. We've talked about kids in this culture of disrespect online, which ultimately hurts their learning. It ultimately hurts their self-esteem and their anxiety level. You know, we've just finished up here talking about this executive function skills that need to be developed. And obviously, that's very difficult to do. To develop executive function skills, you have to move a lot. What are some other things that we can just wrap up here with that are positive ways to balance this out, to develop more executive function skills? What are some things? Now, we mentioned movement, exercising a lot, getting outside. What are some other things that can help do that?
I believe, again, as a home and careers teacher, life skills, kids love to cook.
Okay.
I have not had kids ever that say, I don't like this. I hate cooking. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a lot of master chefs out there looking at the cooking shows. And again, if that's TV and watching that, that's fine. Taking an iPad into the kitchen, propping it up, cooking with mom and dad. They need to be in the meal prep. It's a lot of fun and a lot of great talking can happen in conversations then. So I would say the executive function, learning a new skill, whether it's a new language or learning new recipes, learning how to cook, that goes into the measuring. It goes into following directions and ask any teacher out there how that's going. Kids following directions, definitely movement, learning a new skill.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Getting out there in the fresh air. If you have a dog, walk that puppy, walk the dog. But I'm going to go with the cooking and working in the kitchen. And I'm talking as young as 4, 5, or 6 years old. My kids were in the kitchen helping me pour something in. And I think it's going to be fantastic. You've got 3 meals a day for the most part in most families. Instead of serving your children, have them learn how to be involved and cook for the family.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's such a great idea. And I remember when one of my boys was probably, I don't know, in fifth grade or something, or fourth grade, it was something young there. And he made all the sides for Thanksgiving. And he came into the den. We were kind of getting ready to eat. I couldn't believe it. He wanted to make all the sides, you know, the sweet potato casserole and the green beans and all that Jell-O salad and all that stuff. And he came in. He was so excited. And he said, okay, everybody. Everything's done. And he looked at me and he said, Mom, I feel so accomplished. Like he said that. I'm like, oh my goodness. And I was like so excited because I got to sit on the couch while he cooked. But anyway, so what a great tip For executive function skill development, cooking does include so many skills that they need to practice. It's not playing Fortnite. Before we wrap up, I just want to touch on just one final thing that I remember talking with you about earlier. You're finding that kids that are so young, under the age of 13, are playing games like Fortnite and other games that are not rated for their ages.
Mm-hmm.
How does this happen? I mean, are we as, with my oldest son, I never paid attention to the game ratings.
All the games have ratings. I think that the Fortnite and the Roblox need to go up to about 16 years of age at least. But all I need to do is put in a different birth date.
Oh yeah, you can cheat the system, but I don't think parents understand that. I don't think parents understand that your 10-year-old should not be playing Fortnite.
And unfortunately, when I was teaching in the school and I asked students, how do you get on there if you're not 13? Just pretending I didn't know. Oh, my mom signed me up. I didn't hear that. And what I like to do is talk about their digital footprint. When you were on social media and you were on some of these sites that you weren't supposed to be 13, let's just pretend it's a job interview. Now, the likelihood of me going back and somebody sitting across the table and saying, Melanie, I noticed in 2021, you were really only 8 years old. You said you were 13 and you were playing this. It's a great conversation for character with your child. So if you lied back then, how can I trust you now?
Yeah.
I don't want to hire someone for my company that I can't trust.
Right.
And you got away with that. How many other things have you gotten away with? So great talk about character. And I know I'm backtracking, but I just have to throw this in. Some of the kids with social phobias that don't want to go to school, and this was came from the counselor, is that the longer the parents keep them home from school and not facing their fears of going to school, whatever that fear may be, the longer it's going to take for them to actually go back to school.
Yeah.
You don't want your child sitting in their room the rest of their lives.
No.
Got to be able to face your fears.
They
got
to get through that awkwardness. And the best way to get through all that is to get them off of a screen. And this is not just my opinion. This is science. To get them off of a screen and to get them in front of other people, eyeball to eyeball, face to face.
And start slowly. Go to the grocery store, have them pay. And not even the grocery store, go to a convenience store.
Yeah.
Go somewhere and have them pay and say, thank you very much. Have a good day, something.
Right.
And slowly build on those.
So that's going to be a challenge for all of us who've had our kids home on their screen. We hope that today has helped you. But let's wrap up, Rana, with just one final word of encouragement for parents. I always like to do this. I just want to put you on the spot here a minute. And if you... You know, we're sitting in front of this audience and this whole audience, there was a group and we were in a live session and there was a group of parents in front of us and their parents and they're listening and they are just feeling really discouraged. What can you say to encourage them?
You are doing the best you can under these circumstances. But again, looking to the future, if you know now what you can do to make your life easier, your child's life mentally, socially, and academically better, would you do that? And they would probably, hopefully, all say yes. Then please heed our advice and get them off the screens unless they are doing homework where you are sitting beside them, reading a book, or you are, don't hover, but you're beside them maybe doing your work.
Yeah.
You are doing the best you can. I'm sure you are. But please, you can do better for the sake of your child to get them off the screens and on age-appropriate books. And I know the kids are going to be like, I don't want to read because you've been on the screen. Of course, a book. That's like saying, here's a cake that's been baked and here's one that's made out of cardboard. Which one would you like? Use our advice. We've got so many examples. We are not making this up. People can reach out to me on my website and email me with questions or book me to come. I've come to PTSA meetings, schools, churches, anything. I will talk to any audience and I have proof of what I'm saying, just like you do.
That's so encouraging though, to just realize everything that you have, parents, everything that we everything that we need, we have. And that is spending more time with our kids. And even if you're overwhelmed, you know what? You've got an extra couple hours every day. You've got an extra 30 minutes. You've got an extra 15 minutes here and there to stop what you're doing and go in and just work alongside with your kids. Work, you know, smarter, not harder, right? So I think that's really good advice to end on, to slow down, take a break, figure out what your kids are really doing, and don't let their drama, you know, run the ship here, because they're like monkeys running the zoo. We've got to get back in control of what's happening. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised when you realize that, hey, that math homework really only takes 15 minutes and it really doesn't take 2 hours, but you're going to need to get in there and direct that. So Rana's website is socialmediasafety.education. You spell out that word education, socialmediasafety.education. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melanie. Keep up the good work. You're doing awesome.
Well, I appreciate you so much. And I know that you agree with us when we say that kids don't need video games. They don't need social media. We need to move their entertainment and their social lives offline. Let them be kids. Let them be teenagers. Yes. There's plenty of time the rest of their life for all this stuff. Right now, we don't have much time to get our parental influence and our values and everything taught to our kids. And we need to do this in a calm environment. And we need to just remove all this conflict from our home. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, because the more people that get the word out, hopefully we'll have the positive change.
Well, I hope that you all enjoyed listening today. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast with your friends. And head over to our website to donate and learn more about our Screen Strong Challenge. Also, make sure to join our Screen Strong Families Facebook group, where you'll find support from other parents just like you. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.